This is Digital Dave.
Yeah, Magneto Mel, finally catching up with the game here.
Well, it's that time shift. We allow you 3 hours because you have to come from the left coast.
Yeah, two hours.
Oh, that's right. See, Philly boy here, 3 hours. It's 2 hours here.
So just before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about what accidents, how they impact the controller side of the situations. And so that's what happens when the accident happens in terms of the procedure. And then how does that translate into informing standards for controller proficiencies and controller methodologies?
It's a slow, painful process, I'm afraid. Something I've heard pilots are starting to notice and whatnot. Controllers, especially in the centers and whatnot, are actually starting to call out more convective weather as they see it on the radar scopes. There was a period there where general aviation accidents involving thunderstorms were really peaking, and say probably for about the last 5 years. There's a culture, if you will, where center controllers, of course, are dealing mainly with higher altitude aircraft. For instance, you'll have four or five high altitude sectors, say 24,000 and above. You may have one or two sectors that are 11,000 up to 23, flight level 230. But you only have one sector per area, or maybe even none, that are actually 10,000 feet below. That puts the center controllers at a disadvantage over most of the approach controllers and whatnot in handling general aviation, because most of general aviation is found 10,000 feet below. It makes us also susceptible to the idea that airplanes have weather radar. And there isn't a very good training program in the FAA to distinguish between what types of airplanes would have weather radar and which types don't. For instance, we know about transponders, slant alpha, slant Charlie, whatever, but there's no designator to say I've got a storm scope,
right,
or I've got what I refer to as real weather radar on board, or that I have an X-RAT. And so there was a deficiency in the knowledge in the culture of the centers and whatnot as far as what kind of airplane had its own radar, how comfortable they were with the weather. So anyway, there was quite a spike in the accidents, but now that it's gone through all the accident investigations, the NTSB's been very, very forceful in pushing the agenda to get the controllers to call the thunderstorms they see on their radar scopes more often. So, and NexRad's factored into that, of course.
How have those technologies, being on the pilot, has that shown a decrease in the job you have to do in dealing, like you say, if you're dealing with weather, but you also have to continue to do the sequence of separation that you're there to do. So taking some of that responsibility on the pilot side through this technology has been a good thing?
From the accident statistics, it's counterintuitive, but it... And this won't be a very popular statement, and it's just a theory.
Uh-oh.
NexRad, I believe, in the very short term, as it's being introduced, has actually increased the accident rate.
Really?
And let me explain it just a little bit. It used to be, when there was thunderstorms around, general aviation airplanes that weren't capable of carrying their own radar just stayed home.
Stayed away from that area.
Okay. Now that they have NexRad, and they're no longer... if you will, flying blind, they have a tool to help them get around thunderstorms. They're actually flying more in the weather, which, of course, weather severely complicates things for air traffic controllers as people no longer fly straight lines. They start deviating around everything. Well, we actually have more airplanes flying in weather more often. And many of them, of course, are just adapting to the new technology they have with NexRad.
So we need some ADM training.
I think it's just a matter of a new technology coming along, and seriously, there's going to be a learning curve to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't want to disparage anybody, and I don't want to disparage NexRad. NexRad's a wonderful tool, but it does have its limitations.
Right, and technology doesn't replace decision-making skills.
Certainly does not.
So if you lose that... If you lose technology when you're in the middle of a situation, then you're back to square one and you're not in a good spot.
We keep hitting this thing over and over and over again. There's just no substitute for good decision-making, good judgment, if you will.
Are you starting to see pilots calling center controllers and saying, look, I'm seeing a storm on my radar scope here, and I'd like to be vectored around it before you guys even get there?
Not so much. Bob, you seen any of that?
Yeah, we get a lot of that at Evansville. And another thing that I've noticed, so it's become more of a cooperative effort between the pilots and the controllers. Where I'm at, I've got an ASR 8, so technically all I've got is big green blobs out there. I don't have any intensities. I've looked at it for a lot of years, and I can generally tell what might be a little bit heavier as opposed to what might be a little bit lighter, but I can't really tell these pilots that. I have to tell them I don't show intensities.
That's a very good point he's making, is just as there are different systems aboard airplanes, there's different systems the controllers have. And I tried to make this point to a pilot I was talking to one time. I said, you may be talking to me as a sector. I got 25 years experience. I've worked personally very, very hard at being able to vector people around thunderstorms. And it's more art than it is science. Okay? So I've got you vectored around this thunderstorm. And we'll pretend I'm doing a great job anyway.
If he comes out the other side, you did okay.
You know, he tried to drown me out when I said that.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody you've worked with before.
Okay. We'll pretend that I was doing a great job of it. But you're leaving my sector now, and I'm handing you off to the next guy. It could be a guy with a different radar, like Bob, using an ASR 8, an ASR 11, or worse. It could be a veteran controller. It could be a trainee controller.
Well, they're probably different proficiencies with these technologies,
absolutely,
depending on when you came into the controller organization.
Not only is the technology different from sector to sector or facility to facility, you have the experience level different. It is an art. It's something that has to be taught. And the FAA, to my knowledge, in 25 years, never took us back in the DICEM lab and say, hey, look, we're going to teach you how to vector people around thunderstorms. Of course, it's very difficult to do with the simulation we had at the time. So I'm not trying to just beat up on them. But, I mean, we didn't have NEXRAD back at the time when I learned how to do this, and we didn't have the capability to really effectively simulate how weather moves through the area.
And new controllers that are coming in, this is standard to them now then?
Well,
the new technologies are standard.
The new technology that's available at the centers is NEXRAD. But NEXRAD, as we all are learning at a very high price, has a lag in the time. It can be up to 6 minutes, might not be, and we have pretty good coverage where I was, multiple sites feeding in where we were, but it can be up to 6 minutes late for controllers. And I'm not going to go into what pilots have, what the time delay is for them. If they don't know, they need to learn. But we still have the old weather radar available. Now, if you keep that up to snuff, and it does have to be maintained, and it's expensive doing so, it's a great supplement to NEXRAD. But NEXRAD should be always viewed as just a strategic tool, if you will. In other words, make long-range decisions with it. And it really, really should not be used as a tactical tool.
Don't look for holes through the storm.
No.
And
a controller should not be using NEXRAD by itself to vector an airplane within 10 to 15 miles around the edge of a thunderstorm.
Well, now, what about the good old-fashioned, right-up-to-the-minute form of weather information in the PIREPS?
In the PIREPS.
Now, is that something that, we all know you can do all the weather forecasting you want, and then you get up there, and it may or may not be, I mean, weather's one of the few jobs where you can be sort of right some of the time and still have a career. So.
Right.
Subject to change without notice.
Right. So,
if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes.
Yep.
No. So how useful are those? How valid? And what's a good way how to do them correctly?
Power reps, there's no replacing them. It is the best source of what's really happening out there right now. Unfortunately, we've got ourselves into a situation. Again, I hate to drum on this staffing, but as I put in an article one time, staffing affects everything. And controllers are supposed to solicit power reps, but if you're so busy you don't have time, you don't have time. They need to hear the power reps, and we should be, as an industry, encouraging pilots to make the power reps.
Now, what's the what's the procedure for doing that correctly? I mean, we all learn that, but
right.
Not everybody yep. does things the way, you know, you get up there, you want to give information, I don't remember exactly how to mm-hmm. do it.
Usually they just call up and say, Senator, I've got to have a pie rep for you. And fortunately, most people are, how should we say, diplomatic enough to actually ask you if you have the time to take one, which is quite important. Mm-hmm. And because, again, we do have higher priority duties. But once we get, you know, and again, controllers should be soliciting if the conditions warrant. But basically, we want to know the all important, how's the ride?
Yeah.
I get the first things first here. But the outside air temperature, if there's icing, turbulence, anything of that nature, especially icing. There's just no substitute for a power up on icing. It's really important.
I can't help to think, though, that that's so subjective. Me, as a low-time pilot, would be going, man, it stinks up here. It's terrible. And the veterans are all going, what's he talking about? Yep. It's not bad.
Well, and that's an important point, and it's the reason that we should have the time, and all things being perfect, to get more than one or two pie reps. I mean, it should be a relatively constant thing. I'm not saying, you know, every 60 seconds, but it should be every 30 minutes, 45 minutes, and again,
it's because things do change so right. drastically sure. in such a short time. It's like trying to vector people through a hole in a line of thunderstorms. Well, the guy 20 miles back just heard that this guy got through. Well, I'd like to shoot for that. By the time he gets up there, it's not yeah. available.
Well, and I'm sure so, altitudes, of course.
True. Mm-hmm.
Make a big difference.
We learned yeah. that lesson in Dallas.
Altitude
oh,
differences?
Yeah.
No, the guy in front of you made it. The mm-hmm. guy in front of you made it. Yeah, we kept on pressing that one, but one of them didn't make it.
Well, this is Digital Dave and Magneto Mel, and we'll be back in a minute. And you're listening to EAA Radio.